Your Bibles, please, for our second reading to Job chapter 9. So we've had the statement of Bildad. Now we have Job's answer to Bildad in chapters 9 and 10. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. Then Job answered and said, I know it is so of a truth, but how should a man be just with God? If he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one of a thousand. He is wise in heart and mighty in strength. Who hath hardened himself against him and hath prospered? Which removeth the mountains, and they know not, which overturneth them in his anger, which shaketh the earth out of her place, and the pillars thereof tremble, which commandeth the sun, and it riseth not, and sealeth up the stars, which alone spreadeth out the heavens, and treadeth upon the waves of the sea, which maketh Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades, and the chambers of the south, which doeth great things past finding out, yea, and wonders without number. Lo, he goeth by me, and I see him not. He passeth on also, but I perceive him not. Behold, he taketh away. Who can hinder him? Who will say unto him, what doest thou? If God will not withdraw his anger, the proud helpers do stoop under him. How much less shall I answer him and choose out my words to reason with him? Whom, though I were righteous, yet would I not answer, but I would make supplication to my judge. If I had called and he had answered me, yet would I not believe that he had hearkened unto my voice. For he breaketh me with a tempest and multiplieth my wounds without cause. He will not suffer me to take my breath, but filleth me with bitterness. If I speak of strength, lo, he is strong, and of judgment, who shall set me a time to plead? If I justify myself, mine own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I am perfect, it shall also prove me perverse. Though I were perfect, yet would I not know my soul. I would despise my life. This is one thing, therefore I said it. He destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. If the scourge slay suddenly, he will laugh at the trial of the innocent. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covereth the faces of the judges thereof. If not, where and who is he? Now my days are swifter than a post. They flee away. They see no good. They are passed away as the swift ships, as the eagle that hasteth to the prey. If I say, I will forget my complaint, I will leave off my heaviness and comfort myself, I am afraid of all my sorrows. I know that thou wilt not hold me innocent. If I be wicked, then why labor I in vain? If I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean, yet shalt thou plunge me in the ditch, and mine own clothes shall abhor me. For he is not a man as I am, that I should answer him, and we should come together in judgment. Neither is there any daysman betwixt us that might lay his hand upon us both. Let him take his rod away from me, and let not his fear terrify me. Then would I speak and not fear him, but it is not so with me. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. So this is one of those passages in the exchange between Job and his friends where Job is, shall we say, more upright in his speech than at some other times. There are some things that Job says here that are really important, things we need to hear, things we ought to be apprised of. There is a particular humility on Job's lips here, and yet it is punctuated also with perhaps a little bit of frustration. Still, chapter 9, for me personally, is one of those wonderful chapters where we see somewhat of a respite from the despair and even perhaps the self-justifying that Job had offered before and will offer again. And so, again, when we read through this book, we want to offer Job the benefit of the doubt, because at the end of the book, we hear that Job was involved in justifying himself, and yet he was still God's man. He's still a faithful man, although he is fraught with some errors, and God is, as we've heard, maybe smoothing out those kinks in Job's understanding and in his practice and in his faith. All right, so with that as an introduction, notice that Job asks the right question here at the beginning. How shall a man be just with God? Now, can I say that Job is in a wonderful position to ask that question, isn't he? He has been humbled beyond our wildest imaginings. He has seen the true estate and weakness and corruption of the human condition in such a way that we seldom do. We who showered and perfumed ourselves up and made up our faces and our hair before we came. Job is covered in wounds that stink. He has lost every earthly possession. His wife, the companion of his youth, has told him to curse God and die. His friends have come and have begun now to insult him and accuse him of sin and hypocrisy. He is truly a man standing by a thread. And so in this condition, it is the words of Job that we hear that are so very truthful when he says, "How can a man be just with God? God who is perfect, pristine, upright, everlasting, beautiful in an unimaginable array of beauty." And so Job, recognizing his corruption of body and soul, is in a unique position to ask that question, how can a man be just with God? And truly, my dear brothers and sisters, when we are in our right minds, we ask the same question. When we are in our perverse minds, it is when we think that we can, of our own behavior, of our own good deeds, make a deal with God. What's the sign over the door of heaven? No deals. No deals. Your money, your works, your prowess, your smarts, whatever gifts you think you have, they are of no currency here. There is only one thing that is of currency at that gate, and that is the perfect righteousness of Jesus Christ. Turn away. Turn away from self-righteousness. Turn away from my good works will outweigh my bad works in the end. Did you know that those people who say that and those that don't have never, ever done a good work acceptable to God in their lives? Our best works are imperfect and tainted with sin and unable to stand the scrutiny of God's righteous judgment. How, in that estate, can a man be just with God? So, this is how Job begins. And then he goes on, if I can summarize for time's sake, to magnify the majesty of God. And he goes on to talk about God's majesty in such a way that, you know, that he's visible and invisible, right? He's visible in everything that he does, and yet he passes by me and I know it not. He calls me to account and I don't know. I didn't know until just now. He commands me and I didn't know. He's doing all these wondrous things and they're beyond my understanding. So, Job goes on then for quite a few verses to speak of God's greatness. Then he goes on to speak of God's judgments. If he will not withdraw his anger, and that is down in verse 13, the proud helpers do stoop under him. No one resists him. When he places his hand upon you, you will stoop. You will bow, Job says. We are but weakness in his strong sight. All right, so then Job goes on a little bit more about his own estate. He breaketh me with tempest. Not a tempest that is a literal tempest, but the storm of chastisement that the Lord has brought upon Job. And I say chastisement because it is for Job's reclamation. It is for Job's sanctification and salvation, as we will hear, Lord willing, a little bit later on today. Now notice this, verse 20. If I justify myself, mine own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I am perfect, it shall also prove me perverse. And then he goes on to turn that question around. Though I were perfect, yet I would not know my soul. I would despise my life. In other words, if I had any inkling to think I might be perfect, that would not suit either. All right, now in verse 22, Job goes down the wrong road when he says, this one thing, therefore I said it, he destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. Now, we want to give Job the benefit of the doubt here. Job could be saying this. I don't think he's saying it, but he could be saying this. That it doesn't matter. All men die. Everyone is infected with the bite of sin such that all men will suffer its wages. The perfect and the, the wicked. The perfect and the wicked, they are all under that same judgment. It may be, however, that Job is saying this. It doesn't matter how we behave, since we're not perfect in God's sight anyway, God destroys both. And that would be a more perverse way of speaking, wouldn't it? To say that there is no justice with God, there is no discerning with God, that it's either binary, either you're perfect or you're nothing in His sight. Right? All right, so then he goes on a little bit farther to speak about his own estate. Notice what he says, my days are swifter than a post. I believe what that means is that, it's someone that runs with a message. Right? That kind of post. Not a post, post? How are they swift? They just sit there, right? No. Like a mail post. That kind of post. Swifter than a post. They are passed away as the swift ships, as the eagle that hasteth to the prey, and so on. So Job is again talking about his death. Now it is perhaps justifiable to speak about death and its imminence in a situation like Job's. But there is a particular hopelessness in Job's speech here that we want to avoid. So he's not commendable in that. All right, so then notice what Job says, and this is one of those wonderful passages where we see that Job has the right idea but the wrong application. If I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean, thou wilt plunge me in the ditch. Right? What is Job saying? That there is no such thing as a perfect man standing in God's sight. And so what has Job gotten himself a glimpse of here in chapter 9? The perfection of God. The moral verity of God. His virtue. And his eternity. And his incorruption and so on. He has gotten a glimpse of all of that in relief against his own corruption, weakness, and sin. But now notice what Job says. Job says that he is without a daysman to stand between him and God. And while this may accurately reflect the hopelessness of Job's thoughts, it does not reflect the accuracy of the truth that there is a daysman that stands between Job and God. And Job will speak of that daysman in chapter 19, won't he? When he stands up and he says, I know that my Redeemer lives. Well, this is a difficult passage then, in that Job denies the existence of a daysman when truly there is. He may have fallen into a kind of unholy despair, but know this, that even falling into such an unholy despair does not do away with the fact that your Redeemer lives. Right? All right. Well, let's stand and continue praising God then.